Hi, I'm Brian.
And I'm Cade.
And you're listening to
Mysterious Mysteries 21.
We'll be talking about Ring Around the Rosie and also the story behind the nursery rhyme of Ring Around the Rosie of the Black Plague.
Some of the material we will be discussing is very graphic.
Listener discretion is advised, so sit back,
relax,
and enjoy. You always screw that part up.
Always, every time.
I might have to change that. Alright, so Dark Nursery Rhymes Part 2. We're going to be discussing Ring Around the Rosie. I found this. It was written by Stephen Winnick on July 24th, 2014, just so everyone knows, I didn't write this. I'm actually reading what he wrote, or she wrote, or whoever this person may be. Actually, you know what? I'm not reading it at all. I don't like it. Alright, so
midway through plans.
Yeah. I mean, we might come back to it. So, the Black Death is the main story behind Ring Around the Rosie. We talked a little bit about it on Dark Nursery Rhymes Part 1. But, so, the history of it. Nearly 700 years after the Black Death swept through Europe, it still haunts the world as the worst case scenario for an epidemic, called the Great Mortality, as it's caused in devastation. The second greatest pandemic of the bubonic plague became known as the Black Death in the late 17th century.
Didn't it kill off, like, a lot of...
I think it was, like, 50% of Europe.
Yeah.
But it actually... Well, we'll get into it. Okay. So... Okay. Looking closely at the rhyme and the scholarship surrounding this rhyme suggests other interpretations. And this is Stephen Winnick. We're actually going to go back to that now. Ring Around the Rosie, as it's sometimes known, is fixated on the Black Plague. So, Fitzgerald's text. And who is Fitzgerald? Don't know. Anyway, so... Oh, James Fitzgerald is described dark in Matters for English History. Alright, so this James dude wrote, Ring around the rosy, a pocket full of posies, a tissue, we all fall down. So Fitzgerald stated that this rhyme arose from the Great Plague, an outbreak of bubonic plague. I don't know that word. That affected London in the year of 1665. So Ring Around the Rosie is all about the Great Plague, and apparently whimsy being a foil for one of the London's most... Why can't people just use normal words? Alright, not reading that part.
Yeah, I know that, one, it's not surprising with it being about the Black Plague. One, you can tell by the way it's written out.
Oh, yeah.
And two, there's a lot of other media that involves the Black Plague, like I'm pretty sure in the Mask of the Red Death.
Yeah. So a lot of the stuff that I found is honestly useless information. The claim that the rhyme is related to pestilence is even younger. The folklorist who diligently recorded the rhyme itself in the 19th and early 20th centuries never mentioned the plague interpretation, although they surely would have known it if they actually did the research. But the first evidence that they've seen is that people were connecting the rhyme with death and disaster from 1949 when a newspaper, the Observer, I guess that was the newspaper's name, The Observer, ran a parody of the rhyme beginning Ring Around Ringo Ringo Ring Ring A Ring O Geranium a pocket full of uranium. Okay. So that was a Cold War? Was that the Cold War 19?
What year?
49.
End of World War II, beginning of the Cold War.
Well, World War II ended in 45. Anyways, so it was referred to the bombing of Hiroshima. Okay, so yeah, it was towards the end of World War II, not Cold War. I'll call her in a minute. So, referring to the bombing of Hiroshima in 1951, we found the first direct reference to the plague interpretation. Lona and Peter Opie state that some people believe the rhyme refers to the plague, but are not themselves convinced. So finally, there was simply no direct evidence, even if the rhyme itself remained unrecorded for 200 years after the plague. Various types of evidence might exist, a description of children playing dancing games referring to roses and mocking the plague, or oral traditions of the earliest informants making the link. As it turns out, though, neither of these kinds of evidence has turned up, despite meticulous day-by-day accounts of life in London in 1665, and accounts of the plague by people who lived through it. So today's scholars want to know how did the first person who claimed a connection between the events of 1665 and this rhyme find out about the connection, and why can't we find whatever evidence he or she had?
I mean, I could see it, because I don't know how it would be back then, but I know today, like, depending on stuff that goes down like that, there always comes out stuff later on to make it, you know, not as, to keep it known, but not as, like, to let you know the fear of it and what happened versus trying to make it light.
Yeah.
While doing it.
But all this makes scholars skeptical, to say the least. In 2010, English folklorist and librarian Stephen Rowd noted that the plague origin is completely nonsense. And in the 1980s, the Opies, the first recorded and debunked the belief of, in 1951, wrote, "We ourselves had to listen so often to the interpretations that we were reluctant to go out of the house." Still, the story only seems to have grown stronger in the second half of the 20th century, and itself is interesting to folklorists. After all, the story is itself folklore, a tale that was passed on by word of mouth first, then in writing, then online media, and because it is so also about folklore, folklorists classify it as meta-folklore. Folklore about folklore. That's confusing. So, if the plague story is folklore, we would expect to encounter it in different versions and variants, and so we do. The two main variants of the Londonist claim that the rhyme refers to the Great Plague of 1665, and the others claim it's a stem from the Black Death of 1347. Within these two main variants, there are sub-variants. In particular, Fitzgerald and others say in 1665, rhyme originated in London, while others say it came from Eam, a village in the English Midlands that was also infected by the plague in 1665. One article even claims that EM children sang it while dancing around the victims.
That's dark.
Where the hell are these kids' parents? Dancing around dead people.
I mean,
no wonder the Salem witch trials happened.
I mean, I could see it coming from, like, both ends of it.
Yeah.
Like, it's starting off in the, you know, the first, like, 1300s.
Yeah.
And then it really becoming a thing in the 16th.
But there's also individual versions of the story, each with its own quirks. Because the plague can infect different parts of the body and cause different symptoms, because people know about or imagine different historical health practices, and because different versions of the rhyme had different specific words, Plague stories vary widely in the correspondence they find between words and the plague experience. For some, a tissue signifies sneezing.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Sneezing or coughing.
I need a tissue. Fucking allergies are killing me today. While for others, ashes signify cremation or mass burial and just burning all the corpses all at once. Because they ran out of room in morgues and cemeteries and stuff at that time because people were dying left and right.
I mean, look at the London catacombs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much nothing. It's all, you know...
It's all death.
Yeah.
A whole catacomb is nothing but death. So for supporters, the plague, the ring, is a rosy skin rash. While for supporters of the bubonic plague, it's a red inflammation around a black bubo. I think I pronounced that right. B-U-B-O-E? Bubo?
Yeah, that's how I'd say it.
Is that where the word boo-boo came from? But in fact, observing the many different ways in which ring around the rosy has been said to confirm to real or supposed symptoms. It seems clear that the story did not grow from the compelling evidence. Rather, evidence has been gathered to support a compelling story. So, metafolkloric, which is what we talked about earlier, it's folklore about folklore. Stories can be either accurate or inaccurate, but in either case, there is usually a compelling reason why we keep telling them, or a deeper truth that they express. So one question folklorists like to ask is, what has been so interesting to people about this story? That's a hard question to answer, but we can note certain patterns in the kinds of the people who tell it. It's very appealing to historians, to whom a glimpse of the distant past into the present is always exciting. It's especially compelling to historians and the plagues themselves. In fact, standard work about the 1347 plague and the 1665 plague recount the story as fact. Part of the task of such historians is to explain how the plague has continued to influence our lives, and the chance to mention a rhyme for particular places.
Instead of taking a bath once a month, they take one, you know, every day, or,
yeah,
you know, wash hands normally.
Kind of like what we're doing now.
Yeah, it seems very similar.
Well, with...
except without all of the death.
I mean, there's still death with it, but not as much as this hit. So, is she still texting me?
Yep.
Yeah, tell her we got like 40 minutes left. Sorry, work is contacting us while we're trying to do this. All right.
Every time.
Yeah. Damn near. Alright, so, our love for the plague story goes deeper than the agendas of the few interest groups, though even professors who know it's not true can't resist telling it. Folklorists know better than anyone the fascination with things that are older than they seem, and with extraordinary origins of everyday things. Some founders of the discipline of folklore suppose the theory of survivals, which held that culture materials such as nursery rhymes preserved information from the past that was otherwise forgotten. So, to this theory, a shard of pottery, a riddle, or a child's jingle could be the key to unlock the mythology of the distant past, and the folklorist's task was to interpret or decode the cryptic message within these fragments. In fact, the irony is that the plague story resembles nothing so much as 19th century folklorist interpretations of the rhyme, but today's folklorists often express annoyance with the tale's persistence. Maybe it reminds us too much of ourselves. In any case, we certainly understand its appeal, and in the marketplace of ideas, a good story often outsells mere facts, which is very true. That's,
yeah. I mean, look at half the news articles on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Half the shit's fake anyways on Facebook. So, modern genetic analysis suggests that the bubonic plague was caused by the bacterium, we're just going to call it the Y. pestis, because I cannot pronounce what the Y stands for. Chief among the symptoms are painfully swollen lymph glands that form pus-filled boils called buboes. Sufferers also face fever, chills, headache, shortness of breath, hemorrhaging, bloody sputum, S-P-U-T-U-M. Bloody something. Vomiting, delirium, and if it goes untreated, the survival rate was of 50%. So during the Black Death, three different forms of the plague manifested across Europe. Below is a timeline of the gruesome assaults on humanity. And it kind of goes into detail. And this is going back to the 1300s. So it actually...
It spanned for a long time, too.
And then it died, and then it came back.
Yeah.
Like a couple hundred years later. So, 1346... excuse me. 1346, a strain of Y. pestis emerged in Mongolia. According to John Kelly's account, the Great Mortality... And that's... Yeah, that's what he called it, the Great Mortality. It is possibly passed to humans by a pterobaggin, a type of marmot. The deadliest outbreak is in the Mongol capital of Sarai.
Saria?
I think it's Saria. Which the Mongols carried west to the Black Sea area. And I'm sorry I can't pronounce words clearly, but I live in the United States, not across the country, so I don't know how to pronounce some other towns.
Dialects and everything are very hard to get right.
Yeah. So the Mongol king, here we go again. We're going to call him Jenenberg. Maybe I pronounced that right. And his army are in the nearby city of Tana when a brawl erupts between Italian merchants and a group of Muslims. Following the death of one of the Muslims, the Italians flee by sea to the Genoese outpost of Cafe and Jenenberg followed on land. Upon arrival at Cafe, Jenenberg's army lay siege for a year, but they were stricken with an outbreak. As the army catapults the infected bodies of their dead over the city walls, the under siege Genoese became infected also.
Really good way to break down morale if you're, you know, slinging your own...
infected dead bodies over a wall just to infect another town.
That's a lot of hate.
Well, if you think about it, we have that shit nowadays. It's just...
Except it's not someone throwing a random person into a city. Just be like, here, have this person with smallpox.
No, we did that with blankets. With the Indians. Anyways, so May 1347. Both sides in the siege are decimated, and survivors in Cafe escape by sea, leaving behind streets covered with corpses being fed by feral animals. One ship arrives in Constantinople, which once infected loses as much as 90% of its population. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, especially because when Constantinople, one of the really big areas back then.
Yeah. So, that was pretty bad. Alright, so October 1347. Another Caffin ship docks in Sicily. The crew barely alive, so they're infected and they're coming into Sicily. Here the plague kills half the population and moves to Messina. Fleeing residents then spread into the mainland, Italy, where one third of the population is dead by the following summer.
Especially with all this, you would think, especially with like losing 50% of a population, and then with Constantinople, 90%, you'd think it wouldn't be able to come back.
Yeah.
Like, people will come back and want to be there.
Well, I'm sure back then, you know, you have a bunch of these dead bodies laying around on the street, and I'm sure, you know, they were pickpocketing and thieving from the dead bodies and catching it and fleeing. Yep.
And
so
just spreading it farther and farther and farther.
So in November of 1347, so a month later, the plague arrives in France, brought by another one of the cafe ships docking in Marseille. It spreads quickly through the country.
As it always has. And always does.
Then a new strand enters Europe. January of 1348. So a different plague strain enters Europe through the... through... Genoa? Brought by another caffeine ship that docks there. The Genoans attack the ship and drive it away, but they were still infected. Italy faces the second strand while already battling the previous one. So the Y. pestis also heads east from Sicily into the Persian Empire and through Greece. Well, actually, it went through a couple. Greece, Bulgaria, Romania, and Poland, and the south of south to Egypt.
Pretty much spreading all across the Mediterranean and Europe.
As well as Cyprus, which is also hit with destruction from an earthquake and a deadly tidal wave at the same time.
Wow.
They could not win.
No.
Poor Cyprus. So Venice faces its own outbreak by pioneering the first organized response, with committees ordering ships to be inspected and burn those with contagions. Shutting down taverns and restricting wine from unknown sources. The canals fill with gondolas shouting official instructions for disposing of dead bodies. God.
I mean, sounds kind of similar.
Yeah, what we're doing now. Despite those efforts, a plague kills 60% of Venice. So... That was January, so we're going to jump to April 1348. The plague awakens an anti-Semitic rage around Europe. And can you guess which one they're going to go for?
Yes.
The Jews. Jews always get blamed for all this shit. Anything that goes wrong in Europe, it's the Jews' fault.
Every time.
So, causing repeating massacres of the Jewish communities, with the first one taking place in Provence, where 40 Jews were murdered.
Holy shit.
Oh, it gets worse than that. So, in June of 1348, the plague enters England through the port of Malincombe Regis in Dorset. As it spreads through the town, some escape by fleeing inland, inadvertently spreading it further.
So, just accidental... spreading people, I'm guessing, that aren't, like, okay, that are carrying it but don't have symptoms.
I know a lot of people don't believe in the masks that we're having to wear right now during this pandemic, but it does help. And I hate the excuse that people say, you know, when you fart, you can still smell it. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. But when you fart, is shit coming through your pants and underwear? No. It's staying in the fabric.
Yeah.
That's what the mask is for. It's supposed to catch the particles. Yes, you can still smell stuff through the mask. Yes, you can still breathe through the mask. It's supposed to stop the particles that are in the air. And a lot of people don't fucking understand that. It irritates the piss out of me. That's why we've been dealing with this for so long, and all the other countries are back to normal already.
Yeah.
But... I'm not the one to judge. I mean, if you don't want to wear a mask, don't wear it. It's fine. I'm going to continue wearing mine. Only because I'm choosing to, not because my government is asking us to. I'm doing it for my safety.
Me, I just can't afford to get sick.
Yeah, I can't afford to get sick either. All right, so going back. Anti-Semitism spread, summer of 1348. A group of religious zealots known as the Flagellants first began to appear in Germany. These groups of anywhere from 50 to 500 hooded and half-naked men march and sing and thrash themselves with lashes until swollen and bloody. Originally the practice of the 11th century Italian monks during an epidemic, they spread out throughout Europe, also known for their violent anti-Semitism. The Flagellants mysteriously disappeared by 1350. So, 2 years.
Yeah. Oh, just
of weirdness.
Yeah.
All right, so the plague hits Marseille, Paris, and Normandy, and then the strain splits, with one strain moving onto a now Belgian city of Tournai, to the east of the other passing through Calais and Avignon. I hope I'm pronouncing these right. Where 50% of the population dies. The plague also moves through Austria, Switzerland, with a fury of anti-Semitic massacres following it along with the Rhine after a rumor spread that the Jewish had caused the plague by poisoning wells. As Jennifer Wright detailed in her book, Get Well Soon, History's Worst Plagues and the Heroes Who Fought Them. In towns throughout Germany and France, Jewish communities are completely annihilated. In response to King Casimir III of Poland offers a safe haven to the persecuted Jews, starting a mass migration to Poland and Lithuania. Marcellus is also considered a safe haven for Jews.
Why does every time something go wrong?
It's always the Jews. Like, leave them the fuck alone. All they do is pray and go to work like the rest of us. They're just trying to live their life. Leave them alone. They're not doing anything to any... Well, I mean, murderers and child molesters. Yeah, let's get rid of them. I don't care what denomination you're under, but...
Yeah, just...
Oh, I got sick. Let's claim the Jewish.
The most... they have to have a pretty far, you know, jump... You know, vertical leap to hit that point. Got sick. It's the Jews. What?
Like, I don't even think there was a dispute about it either. God, that was bright.
Yeah, they just, like...
It's automatically, it's Jews. We gotta get rid of the Jews. The Jews are filthy animals beneath us, just like what Hitler did.
Oh my god. How do you make that jump?
I don't know. Alright, so we're now gonna jump into October. So we went from... from June 1348 to October 1348. Following the infection, the death of King Edward's third, oh my god, I can't speak. Anyways, King Edward's daughter, Princess Joanne, the plague reaches London. According to King Death, and this is... I believe a book. So King Death, the Black Death, and its aftermath in late medieval England. Yeah, it's a book by Colin Platt. As the devastation grows, Londoners flee to the countryside to find food. Edward blames the plague on garbage and human excrement piled up in London streets and in the Thames River.
Wish I could see why.
Yeah. Alright, so... We're going to jump into the following year, February of 1349. One of the worst massacres of the Jews during the Black Death takes place on Valentine's Day in Strasbourg, with 2,000 Jewish people burned alive in the spring. Oh, okay. So in the spring, 3,000 Jews defend themselves in Mainz against Christians, but are overcome and slaughtered.
Oh yeah, when this also during the time of kind of like the Crusades.
Oh, the Christian Crusades?
Yes.
Yeah, that.
Probably.
I think
then.
It was like the 1200s through like the.
13.
No, I think it was like 14. 14 or 15. I mean, it slowed down after the 13. Like the 1300s. April 1349. the plague hits Wales, brought by people fleeing from southern England, and eventually kills 100,000 people there. And if you look at the population of Wales back in the 1300s, it was very low.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a high populated area, but not as much as it is today. But 100,000 people there, that's...
a medium-sized like, city today.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so now we're going to get into July of 1349. As English ships bring the Black Death to Norway, when it runs aground in Bergen, the ship's crew is dead by the end of the week. The pestilence travels to Denmark and then Sweden, where the king believes fasting on a Friday and foregoing shoes on Sunday will please God and end the plague. It does not work.
I wonder why.
Killing two of the king's brothers and then moving into Russia and also eastern Greenland, forcing the Vikings to halt their exploration of North America. Alright, so in March of 1350, so we're jumping another year, so we went from July to March, July of 1349 to March 1350. Scotland, having so far avoided the plague, hopes to take advantage of English weakness by amassing an army and planning an invasion. This is stupid. While waiting on the border to begin the attack, troops became infected, with 5,000 dying. Choosing to retreat, the soldiers then bring the disease back to their families, and then a third of Scotland perishes.
Facepalm.
Yeah.
No, I just don't even bother with the hand, just straight up turn around and punch on that one.
Yeah. Alright, so then the Black Death fades, leaving half of Europe dead. Alright, so we're going to jump into 1351. I don't have months now, I'm just reading certain things in years. So the plague spread significantly begins to peter out. Possibly thanks to the quarantine efforts, hint hint, after causing the deaths of anywhere between 25 to 50 million people, and leading to the massacre of 210 Jewish communities. All total, Europe has lost about 50% of its population. So, the percentage of death was not just because of the Black Plague. It was also them killing the Jewish community and the massacres of the Jewish communities because they thought they were doing
it. And the Jewish communities already still had to contend with the Black Plague.
Yeah, so now they're having to fight for their life and their dignity by everyone else who think they caused the Black Plague, and they're also trying to fight to stay alive during the Black Plague. They can't catch a break. Alright, so 1353. With the Black Death considered safely behind them, the people of Europe face a changed society. The combination of the massive death rate and the numbers of the survivors fleeing their homes sends entrenched social and economic systems spiraling. It becomes easier to get work for better wages, and the average standard of living rises. With the feudal system dying, the aristocracy... I think I pronounced that right.
Aristocracy.
It's aristocracy. A-R-I-S-T-O-C-R-A-C-Y. Anyways, tries to pass laws preventing any further rise by the peasants, leading to an upheaval of the revolution in England and France. Significantly lost... Wait. Okay. So, significant losses within older intellectual communities brought on by the unprecedented opportunity for new ideas and art concepts to take a hold, directly leading to the Renaissance and the more youthful, enlightening period of human history. The bubonic plague never completely exits, resurfaced several times throughout centuries, like it did.
Didn't it? Wasn't there a case in California not too long ago?
There was a case in Florida. There was a case in California. There was a case, I want to say, in Nevada as well.
It's still around, but it's just, it's calmed down.
Oh, and then the poor Jews have to go through it all over again because during World War II, the scientists were experimenting with diseases like smallpox, the Black Plague, yep, and injecting them with this, trying to find a cure for it. Or some of them were just injecting them just to see how long it would take them to live.
Yeah.
Until they died. So, the Jewish had to deal with it countless times throughout history, as well as most of Europe. But during World War II, I mean, they bring it back. I forget where I read it. I read something not too long ago, actually, about, and I want to say it was in World War II, in one of the concentration camps, they were infecting rats with the bubonic plague and setting them off in the streets of Jewish communities, infecting the Jewish people, killing them that way. And then after World War II ended, and I think the Russians found one of the labs that had a bunch of these rats, guess what they did?
They just torched it.
Nope. They let the rats out. They didn't even kill them. They just let them out.
They said, oh, poor animal. They let him out. I just see one guy going in there and being like, looking through the nose, be like, oh, we fucked up.
Yeah. They literally let the bubonic plague out.
Run wild.
And then they had a little scare after World War II with the bubonic plague because of the rats.
But at least now we have, at that point, we had a lot better medical.
Oh, yeah. We were able to catch it in time and deal with it and yeah. give them the antibiotics that they needed and medicines that they needed to survive through it.
Penicillin.
And, I'm allergic to penicillin.
Damn.
Yeah. But,
I can't say nothing. I'm not the only person in my family that's not allergic to it.
But there are, see, the Germans back in World War II. I also want to say they did something with smallpox as well, where they infected someone and sent them into a mass congregation and caused a smallpox outbreak as well.
Biological warfare is a no-go.
Yeah. All right, so the Black Plague has a lot of information. You can find a crap ton of information online on the Black Plague from the 1300s and then from the 1500s when it came back a little bit.
That helped because it was so well documented because of how long it went, so you can go back, you know.
But I pretty much just got, like, the gist information just to kind of give you the idea of time frames of when it passed through certain countries, how it passed through countries.
Mainly by traders or...
Traders are people just trying to run from the plague and coming in contact with it and then infecting a whole other country.
Yeah. Kind of like how...
Dun dun dun, welcome to today.
The coof.
I mean, if they would have just... I mean, back then, you can't really just say that it just followed protocol, they would have been fine, because no, they didn't have the medicine or anything to really...
Yeah.
It was literally, you got it, stay in bed, you're gonna die, and people didn't listen to that.
Herd immunity. Enough people get sick, eventually people are gonna learn to fight it off.
And I want to say we do have somewhat of an immunity to it, because the Black Plague has never really died off, it's still around. I mean, like we talked about earlier, but... I want to say we adapted to it.
Instead of actually, you know, finding something to fix it, we just got over it.
Yeah. But it sucks for the Jewish. I mean, they seriously can never catch a break when it comes to anything happening in Europe. I mean, hell, look at right now with the bombings in Israel.
Feel bad when they never ever catch a break.
Mm-mm.
One thing happens, this will be fine, we've got this. Why are they all blaming us? We could.
We're just trying to survive like the rest of y'all. But there's a lot of information, and I think it's interesting that a lot of these scholars believe that the nursery rhyme Ring Around the Rosie had nothing to do with the Black Plague at all. But if you go back in history, you have Ring Around the Rosie, Pocket Full of Posies. So they put posies literally in the pockets of the deceased. So the smell of the dead wasn't so overpowering in the towns and, you know, in the villages and stuff like that.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it's like just putting potpourri in a room just to get a certain smell so you're not smelling what's actually there.
Yeah.
So, honestly, that's all I got today. I, like I said, if I did any more digging, I'd probably have to do like 2 or 3 more episodes of this, but I'm ready to get on to the next one because I'm excited for it, and Kate has no idea which one we're doing next, like he never does. Also,
element of surprise always works better for me.
Yeah. Also, welcome back, Kate. I know I've done 2 episodes without you, and it's going to happen again soon because I'm going back down south soon to see my mom and my siblings. But, yeah, that's all I got today. So this one's going to be considerably shorter than most of our, me and his, recordings. Only because I just don't want to get into another spill. Yeah, that's all I got today. I don't want to add any more.
I mean, Ring Around Rosie, there's a lot of information there. And it all leads to different things.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to track down one specific way where it started, you know, where it came from.
Yep.
So.
Alright, well, anyway, so we are on Pocket Cast, Radio Public, Google Podcast, Breaker, Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts. We are also on...
Isn't it Overcast?
Overcast. That's the one that I tried to tell y'all last episode. I could not think of the app at all.
That one's gotta be fairly new because I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, I just recently downloaded it just to make sure it was actually on there. It's on there. Also, Patreons, again, a $3 tier will get you a shout out, and starting October, we are going to do bonus episodes, probably 2 or 3 a month, so you'll get those if you are a Patreon. And eventually we'll have the $3, the $5, and the $10. The $3 will get you the bonus episodes and a shout out. The $5, oh wait, let me retract, $3 gets you a shout out on all of our episodes for every time you become a Patreon, or if you donate a little bit more to help us keep doing this. The $5, you get a shout out on every episode, plus you get the bonus episodes. The $10, you will get shout outs, bonus episodes, and also I'm going to have decals of our emblem for our podcast made, and possibly get those sent out as well. And possibly doing a Discord chat with fans so they can talk with us. If anybody has anything they want to add or anything they want us to talk about for me to do the research for, you can get with us on Facebook, Instagram by just going and putting the search bar Mysterious Mysteries 21. And
Facebook, Instagram, maybe do a Twitter.
You can do the Twitter. I don't like Twitter. You can do the Twitter. I got Facebook and Instagram, so. Yeah, you can. Well, no, you should be able to pull our emblem off of something to where you can use it for the background for it. But yeah, if y'all want us to talk about something or discuss something, let us know on Instagram. Send us a message. On Facebook, send us a message, leave a post, leave something. But We are now in 5 countries, one of which is including the United States. And I think
I hope so.
I think we're in
India, Switzerland, Germany, and the Philippines.
Yes. So India, Switzerland, Philippines, and Germany. In the United States, we are in what, 12 or 13 states?
Yeah, Washington, Texas, Louisiana, Florida, New Jersey, right?
Yeah, Arizona.
Arizona, Missouri, Wisconsin, Ohio,
yeah.
California, something like that.
Regardless, thank you all for your listens. We really do appreciate it, and we'd love to hear y'all's feedback. Honestly, if it's negative, I'm good with that as well. I take criticism very well, so if there's something that you would like for us to change or to work on, let us know. I know my reading skills, unfortunately, were kind of off today. I've been drinking, and it's no excuse, really. I suck at reading, just FYI.
Hey, at least you don't mess up the intro almost every time.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to change that. I'll probably give you the, I'll probably give you, I don't know. We'll rework
it. We'll figure it out.
But, well, thank y'all, and we appreciate all the listens that we've gotten, and we hope to keep you entertained.
So, hopefully you keep coming back.
Until next time, we will talk to y'all later.
Talk to y'all later.